Start your engines and join me in the new mobile game, RuPaul's Drag Race Superstar. May the best superstar win. Available now.
In a world full of straight people,
aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race?
RuPaul's Drag Race, may the best drag queen win. Drag queen win.
And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
I'm Matt McConkie. I'm a writer, performer, and host of this podcast about And Just Like That. But now that we've recapped both seasons of the show, I couldn't help but wonder, should I go back and cover the original Sex and the City? The answer, of course, is no, but I can't be stopped, so every week I'll be joined by my very own Mirandas and Charlottes to unpack an episode or movie of their choosing. We're doing Sex and the City Roulette with extra Samantha and none of the Che. And just like Matt, welcome to the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome to season two of Sex and the City. It's the early years, but people are still doing that thing where they talk to the camera. Turns out, which we thought ended in season one, but it did not. We're going to be talking about episode one. Of course, it's Take Me Out to the Ball Game. This is Carrie nursing her wounds after her breakup with Big, and the girls all go to the Yankee game, and then Carrie dates a Yankee, and Samantha's dating a guy with a small penis, and Miranda gets a Palm Pilot. That's pretty much the episode in a nutshell.
The Palm Pilot's the main storyline.
We're going to spend 45 minutes mostly on Palm Pilot and then a little bit of the other stuff. Let me just introduce these two guests. You know, because this is sort of a ball game themed episode, I invited two of my favorite ballers.
Mm.
The first up, we recently shared the stage together in Roadhouse. And if you have not seen him play the Kelly McGillis role in Top Gun, the musical, you have not lived, but he is a SAG award winning actor and comedian and Instagram superstar. He's been on American Horror Stories and Transparent and Bones and Episodes and Buffy the Vampire Slayer and so, so much more. Tom Lenk, hello.
Oh my God, what an introduction. Oh, it was such an honor to be on stage with you, Matt. Really sad that you didn't get your ass out this time around. There, I said it.
Yeah, it's weird that I ever did that. You know, I was rewatching. Listeners, no one cares. But, you know, in Roadhouse, I was playing the Patrick Swayze role, and there's a big thing where Swayze shows his ass. And we just put a picture of Swayze's ass on the screen for this production. But I was watching the tape of when we did it 10 years ago and completely forgot that I basically got fully naked. And I turned away from the audience, but just, I mean, and I would never have the balls, quite literally,
today.
Anyway, you know who would do it is our next guest.
No. No, I would not.
He is a writer, actor, director, and you've seen him on Curb Your Enthusiasm. You've seen him on stage at The Groundlings and in Grey's Anatomy and Desperate Housewives and Bridesmaids and so, so much more. Mitch Silpa, welcome to the show.
Thank you. But thank you. Pleasure to be here, but I could never get an episode of Bones. I think I auditioned for that. There's like certain shows I auditioned for that maybe were in like the teens. How many times I went in and I couldn't, like New Girl. Remember, I think it was in the teens for that one where it got to the point where they were apologizing when I'd come in.
Look, I auditioned for Bones. I think it was either 13 or 15 times. And my God, I feel so lucky to go in for a show that many times nowadays.
Yeah, I know. I hear
but
you.
I will say I was convinced that the room was haunted. Every time I would go in there, that room specifically on the lot at Fox, my heart would start racing. Sometimes they'd put a piece of wood down and I'd be like, am I supposed to tap dance? Like, why is there wood on this carpet?
A plank of wood, maybe
because women were wearing heels and there. I don't know. But finally, on the last time, like the 15th time, I was tanking and the writer said, hey, I think you're wrong for this part. Will you cold read this other thing? And then I got it.
Wow, ain't just that let me do a cold read way.
All the time, Mitch. I would have cast you on Bones.
Maybe in the reboot.
Oh, is there a reboot already?
Thank you. The Bones reboot.
I don't know. I'm just starting that rumor.
Okay.
Hey, speaking of reboots, no wrong answers, safe space. But do either of you have either of you watched And Just Like That?
I watched the like first episode when it came back.
I think I did the same.
Okay, interesting. Well, listen, it ain't going anywhere. It's going to be a long time before season three comes out. You have a lot of time to catch up.
Oh.
But in terms of the original show, yes. I believe neither of you were like massive Sex and the City fans. Is that right?
I think I wasn't, but I think I've watched like a majority of the episodes.
I never had an opinion. I've watched a few of them, but I haven't watched, I don't even think a majority of the episodes of Sex and the City, but you know, it was such a big show, obviously, at the time.
Yeah.
And I somehow didn't watch it that much.
I forgot it was a half hour long.
Yeah.
Why is it so short? And Just Like That, are those hour or are those 30 minutes?
Those are in that weird kind of streaming, like sometimes they're 40 minutes, sometimes they're an hour. But it is essentially an hour show.
Well, it felt like this episode flew by. Like when it was over, I'm like, oh, that was it?
Yeah.
And just like that, it was
just
over.
Like that, it's over.
Well, I looked at the time and it was only 25 minutes. So were they, I guess they're not even 30 minutes because they're like, here they are, and they're ready to be cut down for when they rerun on TV and you put some commercials in them.
That's right. Yeah, it does flood. And you know, this is early enough in the show that I'm sure even if you haven't seen a ton of it or it had been a while, I'm assuming that there wasn't anything where you're going, what are they talking about?
No.
You get it.
Yeah.
Carrie and Big broke up last season, you know. She's getting back out there and what have you.
Imagine being upset about breaking up with that man. Just let him die. I wish he would have died that season.
Should have brought the Peloton out then.
They should have invented the Peloton early just to kill him off.
He could have died using the Palm Pilot.
He was so boring.
Worst.
Boring.
Mr. Big was the worst.
The absolute worst.
But the grasp, the clutch he had on society as a character at that time, it was, I mean,
it was really something.
We talked about it. It was like you'd have conversations about Big. Ugh.
Yeah, that's the relationship that people were really rooting for, right? Like Carrie and Big more than Carrie and the other ones.
Well, it's a very controversial topic. I mean, to answer your question, yes.
I was Team Aiden. Oh, I guess I did watch it a lot. Yeah.
Apparently. I mean, and I wasn't Team Aiden at the time, but now that I'm older looking back, I'm 100% Team Aiden. I hate Big. I'm so glad he's dead. May he rot in hell.
You know? I saw that. That was the first episode where he died of and just like that, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And just like that, Big died.
She didn't help him.
Well, that's the thing. She could have called 911 and she didn't. And there's been a lot of internet chatter about that, but I like to believe that she purposely was like, you know what? Let's let him go. He's put me through a lot of shit.
What? She didn't call 911? What?
Well, I think
I'll go back and watch it.
She just cried and technically her phone went into the shower when she was trying to help him, and so I think it was justified ish. Mm. But I do prefer the version where she essentially killed him.
I remember watching it and thinking I yelled at the TV like call 911, like stop crying. She was holding him. This woman chose to have a scene. Like break to cry instead of actually do something. He's just had a heart. He wasn't dead yet.
But you're right. It's almost like she was like, oh, I want to see what happens. I want to see that moment when your eyes go.
Yeah. There's a part in Titanic. It's been a long time since I've seen it where they're like Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet, like running through the ship when it's sinking. And they're like, they stop to have a scene. And I remember thinking, like, don't have a scene. Like, the ship is sinking. Get the fuck off the ship. And they're having a scene. And, like, that's what it felt like. She'd rather have, like, a little bit of a scene than to actually call 911 or run out and scream, like, my husband's having a heart attack.
You might be, listen, she might have been flashing back to the way she was feeling in this episode. And she was you know what? This guy has fucking put me through enough. Let's let him
go.
Go. So, yeah, when we start off, it's, you know, Carrie constantly freaking out that she's going to run into him somewhere and getting like competing advice from the girls about getting back out there, getting back in the game. And
oh, I get the analogy now. Okay.
It's, oh yeah, getting back in the game.
Yeah.
It's fun. That's fun.
That's the theme. And the other theme is balls.
Balls.
So Samantha jumps in the car with the girls to go to the Yankee game. And she seems to have this perfect new boyfriend. And as soon as they drive away, she's like, James and his tiny penis. And her whole story for the episode is basically grieving the absence of like a giant dong in her life. Let's talk about small dicks for a moment, because it's interesting watching this.
I'm uncomfortable. Is that why you had us both on the show?
Really?
Is that what you're trying to say?
and why just a moment?
Right. But let's talk about small dicks for the rest of the episode and then Palm Pilot. And then that's it.
No, and also they mentioned payphones in this episode and also disposable cameras.
Disposable camera, right. A cigarette.
And a payphone gets used.
Cigarettes.
I want to talk about cigarettes too. Well, but the reason I bring up the small penis thing is I do wonder if that's something they would even do now in and just like that. Because, like, I guess what I'm saying is, does like making fun of a small penis, I mean, that is body shaming, right? I mean, this is something that we...
Yeah, I don't think they would do
no
that
longer
now.
Acceptable.
I think we're too...
Like, area for humor.
Yeah, I think we're past that. I don't think they would... That would fly.
I agree. I think if anything, if this storyline was going on, it would probably be like the opposite, that it's too big. Like, his penis is too big.
Which I think
like,
was
oh,
a Samantha story. I can't handle
how big his penis is.
I feel like that is a line she's actually said in another episode, but I could be misremembering. Yeah. Well, listen, this was a real time and place. So have either of you had a Mr. Big breakup? You knew I was going to.
Okay.
You thought I was going to ask if either of you have ever been in a situation like Samantha's in this episode. Yeah. Okay. Well, if you care to answer that. You're welcome to.
I was honestly trying. I've had a feeling you were going to ask that, and I'm trying to think if I've experienced that. I think I have a problem when it's too big. I much prefer small than large, you know.
Yeah.
Where's that?
Yeah,
gonna...
I would say I have had it happen, but it wasn't like something I was running off and like telling my friends about as a joke. It wasn't it wasn't a problem.
I've got TMJ. Look at the size of my mouth compared to my head. God. You know, it's not. There's no. What are we not allowed?
No, is this... sure.
Good. Yeah,
yeah. I
is
get
this,
it.
Is this podcast going up on ScholasticBooks.com?
Yeah, because people need to learn about this. Educate them, Tom.
Look, I mean, it's why poppers were invented, right? For when it's too big.
Mm-hmm.
No, I can't think of a personal story that I would want to share about.
I honestly was not even going to ask. I was going to ask about the Carrie story, and if you have a personal story that might reflect that. Like if you, I mean, my whole 20s was running around West Hollywood, ducking behind a bar, worrying I was going to see someone, but actually really hoping I was going to run into them, and just like playing out a bunch of bullshit.
As I was watching, I kept thinking, oh my God, imagine caring this much about someone after a breakup. That's only here and now. Like, I'm much more able to process, like, okay, that's not about me and I'm moving on. But oh my God, yeah, I just remember being in my 20s and just devastated. I could not shake a breakup in my 20s, and it's why I ended up going to therapy. And I called Zag and I was like, hi Zag, it's me, Tom. I was wondering if I could get a therapist that could help me with the problems of someone who lives in West Hollywood. What do you mean, sir? Of someone of the community of people in West Hollywood, sir? What do you mean? And finally she was like, you want a gay therapist? I'm like, yes, thank you. Like, I couldn't even come out to a stranger on the phone, even though I was out.
Wait, SAG my found friend. You SAG. A therapist?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I called the SAG health fund or whatever. And like, you know, through the insurance, you have like the list of just people in your area that take your insurance. And this one happened to have a specialty in LGBT, whatever. And I was with him for almost 20 years. And we just had our last session because he retired a few weeks ago. And it was devastating. Yeah. It's like he said this, because it was interesting that I went to him for that specific breakup, and he's like, this will feel like that. It will feel like a once, you know, a breakup where you didn't want to break up, and it just feels unsettling, and there's no closure because you're like, no, I still wanted to continue. But I had a big one back in my 20s, which is why I went to him. So
You're probably, when you walk through West Hollywood, where you're going to run into your therapist, you know?
Oh God, I hope I see
him. From him.
I've never seen him in almost 20 years. My friends he's seen my friends. He saw my ex, like everyone would run into him except for me. He came and saw two of my plays because I invited him, but I didn't even get to see him afterwards. But I'm hoping I run into him. Mitch, what about you?
I had a therapist once that I had who came to see my shows, and also I ran into once at the Beverly Center, of all places. Oh. And I remember thinking how we were going, like in a movie where one's going up the escalator and one's going down the escalator. I'm like, oh hi. And then I made some joke, and I'm like, it just felt, it's really awkward to see your therapist in public doing normal things. But I mean, I guess there's, you know, you could see them in a, you know, leather bar or something like that. That would be more jarring than we could talk about. The question was whether we had a Mr. Big.
Yeah, like an ex that you're avoiding spinning out about.
Yeah, many. I don't think it was just in my 20s, though. I don't think I've ever been great at, you know, like a relationship when it breaks up, that like a meaningful one, that it takes me a while to get over it. Really, honestly, I mean, it's never as intense probably as it was in my 20s, but yeah, that period of time where you don't, and then I felt like there's been a couple of exes where for a period of time after we broke up, we would just bump into each other at the most random places. Like, what are the odds that we're, and it was awful. And then one day it just stopped. Like, it just stopped, and I never saw them, or I saw them rarely. But it was like weird that I would try to hide from them.
I never see those ones I was so upset about. Now, like from more recent times, I'm friends with all of my exes, but those ones from in my 20s were just so devastating.
Yeah.
The one that I went to set me into therapy, I let him be friends with my sort of gay group of gay friends from college, and they all smoked weed, and he smoked a lot of weed, and I didn't really, and so they all became friends. And then after the breakup, I was like, oh hey, like I can't be around him, so you know, if you're gonna hang out with him, you know, or vice versa, you know, don't invite me, blah blah blah. And then it just turned into, oh, he took that whole group of friends. I lost that group of friends because I was the one who said I had the problem with him, and because, you know, stoners like to hang out together, and that's fine. So I send
Are they still hanging out?
I send them white light. I surround their bodies with gold and white energy. I don't know. I have no. Yes, some of them still are friends with him.
Wow.
Which is fine.
That's big of you, though. I mean, I have always been a scorched earth. If someone broke up with me, the first thing I would say is like, stay away from my friends. And I would go to my friends and be like, you can't speak to him. And if you ever run into him, you have to be mean to him. And you know, sometimes they would, and they'd call me and tell me about running into him at a bar and they giving him the cold shoulder. And I was like, yes.
Well, that's the thing. I wanted my friends to do that. And they were like, sorry, we're going to be friends with like, but then that was like, oh, that's okay. Well, you're showing your true nature as a friend. You weren't as supportive as I thought you were. But also, it is a lot to ask your friends to like, you must hate them as much as I do, you know?
Yeah, it was so obnoxious.
Matt, I feel like it's the same thing. I think there was a bit of scorched earth for me, but like, I never told my friends to like, you have to like shun them. I just kind of hope they would too. But there's somebody I was in a relationship with in my late 20s that it was awful to break up, and I didn't speak to him for years. It was just awful. And now we're friends. We reconnected and now like we're totally friends, but I never thought that we would ever be friends ever again. So you never know what happens.
Well, that's fine.
Did you have to break the seal? Did you have to sort of go back to him hat in hand to be friends?
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing. He ended up moving to like London because he became a writer and he met a guy there and they eventually got married. And then I was in Paris for the first time ever. And I was with a couple friends and there was like a bookstore. I'm like, let's go in the bookstore. And on the like sale table on the top of it was a book that was written by my ex. And I saw his name and I think it was a book he started writing when we were together. And I saw him like, oh, and I bought it. And then I read it. And then I saw at the end, he had like a website, and I reached out to him because it'd been so many years. And I just said, hey, I just read your book. And then he responded, he goes, oh my God, I literally was about to shut down this website. What's your number? And then we reconnected and then we're just now friends. But it was the weirdest thing that his book was just sitting there published and I bought it and it was good. It was a good book. It was a good writer. He's a good writer. What?
Was he writing about you?
It's a young adult book.
I feel like we all have an ex that moved to London and I don't want to think about it. I like this term of scorched earth. I'm trying to think if I've reconnected with a scorched earth ex. I think the ones that I was like, you're dead to me. Matt, have you reconnected in that way?
I would say I'm friends or friendly with all of my exes except one. You know who I'm talking about, Tom. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Only because it was like, oh, I actually am owed an apology here. Not even for breaking up with me. It's like, thank God you did. I didn't want to stay with that person.
Yeah.
But for everything that happened before that, I would like to think that getting older, because I definitely had people I dated when I was younger where I was the bad guy and I had to sort of make amends later in life and think I have. And it's like, well, I never got that. So we're not in contact, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. I never thought of myself like, could I have been the bad guy in some of those relationships? I guess I could have. That's an interesting thought.
It's not, I don't know if it's that simple. You know, like sometimes, it's usually both of you, like, and you, nobody knows what they're doing, especially, I mean, probably through most of your life, but like, especially in your 20s, everyone's making mistakes. Everyone's damaged and like, no one knows what they're doing. Yeah, I don't know. I think no one's perfect. Well, sometimes one's a lot more imperfect. Sometimes it's clearer that there's been some sort of like, you know, mental or verbal abuse, things like that, or, you know, that sometimes takes a while to identify.
Exactly. Yeah. For the most part, like as an adult, that's just not how healthy breakups shake out, you know, but when you're younger and I mean, Carrie, I think is probably over 30 at this point in the show, but this is very much like Mr. Big is a bad guy. And he usually is throughout the series, which is why I'm so happy to see him die. But what I did often do after getting my heart broken is similar to what I didn't date a Yankee, but I would go for someone that was like not particularly challenging, someone I knew I wouldn't get too emotionally attached to, and that this is so psychotic, but on some level, I can only say this now, in, you know, looking back, on some level, there was also like, oh, and if he sees us together, or if our pictures on Facebook or whatever it was at the time, it could create some jealousy. Never worked.
But you know what, Matt? I think everybody does that. Like, yeah. That's just human. Of course. That's all I'll say.
Let's end there.
And just like that.
And just like that, we ended the podcast.
Tom, you look like you were in deep thought about the
I mean, you've got me thinking about a lot of exes. And then, like, I'm thinking about, like, ones, you know, do you ever, like, you barely even remember the ex, and then you run into them, and, like, clearly it was, like, so much bigger to them and their memory than it was to you. Oh, and yeah. I'm just like,
wait, are you talking about someone that you just dated for a short period of time, or someone you had, like, a real, like, long-term relationship with?
I mean, I've had people that I dated for, you know, months at a time, and then they just, like, there's kind of like a, like, there's my big breakup list from my life, and they're just not on that, and I've somehow forgotten about them, which just goes to prove, like, when I think about when you do a bad audition, and casting director's like, oh yeah, we don't really remember those. We remember the good ones. Mm-hmm. Like, people don't necessarily, or like, you know, if you make a movie as a director and it doesn't do well, like, you can still move on to you can have a big success, because people don't remember the failures as much, I think. Is that true? Maybe.
I think so. And I know exactly what you're talking about. I think I've probably been on both sides of that, where there were some people that, like, I like barely dated, but built up a whole storyline in my mm-hmm. mind around mm-hmm. what happened, and they have pretty much forgotten me.
I think the only ones, if I would have had to have dated them for a long period of time to have been like that upset over them. The short ones,
yeah,
you know, I don't think I was as invested emotionally, but once I invest, I'm very emotional.
And I'm just thinking about, like, those exes that you were mad at or who hurt your feelings. What a fun thing to just pop up in it as performers, to pop up in a show or movie that they're in and just ruin it for them. Just ruin the reality of that movie. That's fun revenge. I never thought about that.
Wait, explain that.
I don't know. Like, some gay that you dated, Mitch, they're sitting at Bridesmaids just enjoying the movie. And then all of a sudden, huge scene. You're the star. You're a star, Mitch.
Got it.
And they're like,
everyone's laughing and they're silently, and they're like, sobbing. Oh,
I know. Don't you wish you could, like, Purple Rose of Cairo the whole thing and kind of, like, turn and look at them, break the fourth wall?
And be like, that's right.
Feel bad now, and then go back to this. And they're the only ones that, like, saw that moment.
Wow. Yeah, there's somebody out there that basically had that experience. Maybe there's a few of them, you know?
Yeah, maybe. I feel bad that I didn't choose, like, you know, you're probably sick of talking about that credit. I'm sorry I didn't choose the law where you put the lawyer.
I'm not sick of talking about any credits. I just want to work.
Okay, great. Well, so I'll replace it with the law show that you were on with.
Oh, All Rise?
Yeah, you're just like, oh, they're like repeated. You're repeatedly ruining the show for them.
We'll go back and edit this and just put in and just paste in all you rise. Saying All Rise.
All Rise instead all of Bridesmaids.
Rise.
Yeah. And it kind of sounds alike. It works.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for understanding.
I will say my experience was different from Carrie's in dating the Yankee type, in that I did find it weirdly healing. Like, in maybe a superficial way, but it didn't end, you know, like, this ends in tears because he kisses her and she just ran into Big. She's thinking about Big. She breaks up with him. But I don't know. I always felt like kind of a lighter, meaningless fling actually does help.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I would agree with that. Yeah, it's just forward motion.
Yeah.
It's at least taking your mind off something for a period of time.
Right. You have to get to get over one man, you get under several. Is that the?
Yeah. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. As many of you know, I'm a big therapy person. I would say for me, the greatest benefit of therapy, if I can look back at all of the years that I have spent in therapy, has been changing the way that I speak to myself internally. You know, everybody always says, like, you have to treat yourself the way that you would treat a friend. That's much easier said than done. So many of us are our own worst critics, and it takes some help to untangle that. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try, because it's entirely online, so it's convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire, you get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So take a moment, visit betterhelp.com/likemat today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/likemat. You know, this show is all about honest conversations where we really face our fears. And for some of us, it's a fear of aging. For some of us, it's a fear of carbs. And hey, I get it. The fear is real. But that is why I'm so excited to tell you about our sponsor, Hero Bread. Hero Bread has remade many of your favorite foods, but in these fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. Two of my favorite things. I've always said if I ever have twin children, their names are going to be protein and fiber. What did I have for lunch today? A tuna sandwich on their seeded bread. It was the perfect texture. It toasts up just like a dream. My God, was it good. And right now, if you go to hero.co and use code LIKEMAT, you will get 10% off your first order. So don't give up on being a breadhead, because Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co, use code LIKEMAT at checkout. That's LIKEMAT at HERO.co.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It was funny to me that when they got together, the women for their brunch or whatever, that they didn't, that Miranda was
dressed like that.
Oh my God. Miranda's costumes.
We have to talk about how they costumed Miranda in this episode. I mean, I was constantly like, what is happening?
And styled her hair.
The hair, the over, there was like a
blue overalls. Point.
She looked like she was about to go paint somebody's apartment, but it was fashion, quote unquote.
When she gets up from the table, I know we're not talking about this right now, but when she gets up from the table in the brunch and she like has that speech where she's like, we're smart women and we shouldn't be just talking about balls and big. And then she's got, while she's doing it, she's already wearing like some, her turtleneck, and like that's a solid color turtleneck, solid color that from like looked like from the Gap. And then she puts on this huge down blue jacket, and then she ends the speech putting on that like ski cap that she doesn't put on well. And I can't believe they didn't give her another take, because it made her look like a Keebler elf for 1 second. And all I'm thinking is, I want to perform that monologue somewhere with the exact outfit and end it with that, put that coat on, put the hat on, and then leave.
Do it, Mitch.
That whole outfit, because she had like a red turneck at one point, and then another scene she had like a purple one. What was it? I don't even remember.
If you don't do a solo show called The Miranda Logs, then I'll be mad forever.
I do hope this inspires something.
I am working on something. Maybe I'll put it in. I'll kind of like put it in there somewhere.
Okay, great.
See if anyone gets it. Because I really want to do a monologue from Ordinary People as Mary Tyler Moore at one point too. That's something I've always wanted to do.
You could keep this outfit on after you do the after you put on Miranda's outfit for the Mary Tyler Moore character.
Oh, just a different wig.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're both Miranda's... sort of waspy women.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, Miranda's spiky hair was just it's quite a look. You know that in now in present day and just like that, Miranda is fully identifying as a lesbian.
Yes.
Well, I was gonna say her whole vibe in this episode, I mean, it was definitely an allusion to things mm-hmm. to come, foreshadowing, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very, yeah, felt like, you know, what is this 90s or is this early 2000s?
Yeah,
I think it's early 2000s, isn't it? Or is it 90s?
It's probably right around 2000 because I think it premiered in, like fall of 98. So
yeah,
it's a season two. So we're
it
probably
has
right
to be
around
before 2001 because I mean, the World Trade Center is in it.
Right.
Well, the fact that they
just brought up 9/11 and
ruins the vibe.
Sorry.
The fact that her whole point of that brunch though is we've got to stop talking about men and our sex lives and our dating life when, I mean, that's not what the show is about, obviously, but it is a good portion of what they talk about on the show. So it was funny that she's like, can we stop talking about this?
Well, that to me was just like what the show does a lot, especially even now, which is like respond to criticism. Like, I think that was them trying to address the haters out there. They're like, this is just these four women who are, they're so successful and intelligent. And all they talk about is men. And they're like, oh, we'll just have Miranda say that and let people know we're in on this, you know?
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, and it was interesting that it sort of came around at the end and you think she's calling big at the end to talk to him and then she shows up and it's Miranda.
Did you fall
was a great mystery.
I did fall for it.
I didn't.
I fell for it. You guys, I'm gullible.
Oh,
I knew it was Miranda.
But you know that at the end it was like, actually we're focused on women supporting each other and female friendships, etc.
Yeah. Which wasn't so much the case in season one. It really was a little more like this is about women looking for love and then they'll meet up and kind of compare notes on it. But I like this feels like one of the first moments where they're really trying to land the plane that like, oh, actually the love story here that we're going to tell
is them
forever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is them, which is why we love the show.
Wait, the Charlotte storyline with the man that wouldn't stop adjusting himself. I had a fascinating ending, which was that she tries to assist the situation by purchasing us a small gift and then it turns him off and he's like, I'm out of here. Not that I bought anyone underwear too soon in a relationship, but I did have a dating thing where I was a guy, I flew me out to Miami because he was traveling for work and we'd only had a brief time together before that. And I was late. How did it work? I was late picking him up one day after his work thing. And he was like, I can't believe you were late. And I'm like, oh, yeah, sorry. I'm in a town. I got stuck behind a drawbridge. It's Miami and I've never been here before. And I've rented a car and I'm, you know, I run late a lot of times. And sorry. And he was like, that doesn't work for me. I'm like, what? What do you mean? He was like, well, that just like, that just shows how unthoughtful you are. And I'm like, well, okay, I just, as a person, kind of have forgiven myself for running late. I don't hold it against other people if you're late. It's not, I understand that it's a problem for you, but like, I don't know, what's the compromise? Okay, I can try to be more on time, but any level of me not, anyway, it that just me being late completely turned him off and he ended it and I still had one more night to spend there. And why didn't I just get my own place and go home?
But you have stuff to stay with him on the last night?
I stayed with him. Like what? Why didn't I not?
How old are you?
And then I think he asked me to nair his back. I can't remember if that was before he broke up with me essentially or after, but
I hope it was after.
Like, I hope it was after. I was like, I can't believe that someone would ask me to do that this early and like, oh, you're turned off by me being late this early in the dating scenario. I'm turned off by you asking me to nair your back. Maybe 6 months. I would. Yeah. But no, too soon. And also, no, I don't want to at all.
Also, Nair doesn't work, does it?
I mean, if you don't want to shave, you know, it essentially just breaks the hair off. Not break, it sort of burns. What does it do? No, it melts. It melts the hair.
Melts.
I've taken us down a path and I'm sorry.
Listen, I actually have talked about like body hair removal and pubic hair removal in almost every episode of this podcast.
Oh, great.
So you're right on track, strangely. Yeah. So Charlotte's guy couldn't stop touching his balls. It's never made clear, like, is he itching them? He seems to just sort of be
adjusting. There are
adjusting
those people that
constantly.
Are just kind of unaware that they adjust their package frequently.
Yeah, they're always sort of touching it and moving it around.
Yeah.
Is that because it's big or, well, we don't know. We don't know. There's so many reasons why they could be adjusting it.
Well, yeah, it's hard to, whatever itches, the problem was, itches. It's hard to imagine that a new pair of underwear would fix it.
No.
What was she saying? Because have you tried on those ones that have the area that have like a built-in cock ring or the sort of built-in pouch that you, because I get these ads, like there's underwear with a built-in pouch that will separate the balls from the rest of your leg so they don't rub against each other and so there's not sweat. So that way everything's up and separate. You haven't done that?
But I mean, maybe I need to.
Yeah.
They should sponsor this show, actually. I just had this memory of, I was thinking, has anyone ever like bought me underwear? Have I ever had a weird, inappropriate example of this? When I was 21, had just moved to LA, I had this like cousin come out of the woodwork that I didn't know was still alive. I barely had like a childhood memory of meeting him once, but I knew that he was also gay. And picture like Tiger King, but like dirtier. And that was him. And he tracked me down and it turns out was bi and had a woman with him who was his fiance, but like kept trying to, he was also older and was just clearly like kept wanting to let me know like, hey, I'm on to you. And that was like, oh, I'm out. I live with my boyfriend in West Hollywood. The jig is up. There's no, he was always kind of like all saying like almost sexual things. Anyway, when we met for brunch at the French Market in West Hollywood.
Oh, RIP.
Mm-hmm. I remember that place.
He handed me a gift and it was one of those kind of old timey, like JCPenney style gift boxes where it's like wrapping paper print on the box. You know what I mean?
Oh.
And then you open it and it was a pair of silk boxer shorts with hearts on it.
Oh.
And I was like, oh God. And I
so
like
inappropriate.
Closing such it really a, quickly. And his weird fiance, gift. She goes, he has the same pair. She was like, this is just a real rite of passage from one gay cousin to the next.
Oh, wow. Oh. Wow.
So strange.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Where is he now?
He's dead too. Just like the French market.
Okay.
It got stranger and stranger. And he and this woman were dating because they were both not like Renfair people, but it was this other group that does reenactments from like battles from the Middle Ages.
Okay.
And
okay.
So they were like in a weird kind of cosplay world. Kept trying to invite me to their festivals or whatever. I never saw him again after that one brunch. He was so weird and inappropriate. I just avoided him, but I had this series of voicemails he left on my cell phone that got like increasingly more psychotic. Yes, he got angrier and angrier that I didn't call him back. And then my mom called me one day and was like, Cousin Robbie died. I was like, oh, that's too bad. And the funny thing is, I can't remember how he died for the life of me. Sometimes I'll ask my mom and she's like, I don't remember either. But our joke is that he died in battle in one of the
battles
from the Middle Ages.
I hope he died doing what he loved.
Oh. Yeah. In those boxers.
Oh, this.
But getting those messages must have been disturbing.
I hope you saved them. I hope
I wish it was so many cell phones ago, but it would be, it was almost like the Office Space thing or just like you play, then they got it. But except he was like, Hello, Matt. It's your cousin, Robert. Notice you haven't called me back. And the next one's like, Matthew, it's Robert. Why haven't you called me? And then there was one where he goes, hello, Matthew. It's cousin Robbie. I'm going to be in West Hollywood. I'm going to go down to the Abbey. Thought maybe you'd meet me for a cocktail. And maybe, I won't go there. I won't go there. I was like, staring at the phone, like, what the fuck are you implying, sir? We were not blood related.
Oh, that was my next question.
Even remotely less insane. Sorry for this.
Wow. Oh my God. I love all of this. I love this. Mitch has got his new solo show, and now you have yours. It's just called Cousin Robbie. Maybe Cousin it's a musical. Robbie. I'm not sure, but I can't wait to see you.
I can't wait to see the wig Abbey, work. The Abbey set.
The Abbey set.
This was like when it was still basically just a coffee shop, but they had drinks at night, but it was, you know, a tiny little spot.
Can I just go back to one thing about the Charlotte present?
Yeah.
I thought his reaction was insane.
Oh, deeply deranged. Like, yeah,
that was a crazy reaction to her gift.
But do you think it was based on one of the writer's experience of like, I gave him a present and he freaked out because it was too soon, you know?
Could be.
But you're right. He was insane. Also, like that man, who was that man?
Who was that man?
Is that man, what is he, like, has he gone on to do
jazz? That's what he was all about. And then when he freaked out on her, he goes, what is this going to lead to? You're going to move in with me and you're going to all of a sudden start hating my music?
Ugh.
Bye. Yeah, he
also,
was
him. I couldn't even tell the difference between him and the Yankee. Wait, can we talk about the Yankee?
Yeah, I want to talk about the Yankee too.
Joe Stark.
I mean, kind of was like, oh, did you cast Steve's cousin? Because they had the same voice. Like, it was very... It was very animation. I mean,
I didn't understand his voice right away. I thought, because he's chewing gum in two scenes.
Yeah.
And like, at first I thought he had a slight accent. Like, I didn't know what there was. And then it wasn't. So
I wonder if he was a real baseball player. Like, did they do
a
stunt casting?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Do you have an intern that does research for you?
Yeah, no, but I have a producer, Renee. Can you find out who played Joe Stark and whether or not he was a real Yankee, and then burst in with that information? Well, we'll circle back to. I mean, yeah, I did. I thought Joe Stark was hot. Maybe the gum chewing was a character choice because baseball. You chew gum in baseball.
It's a well-known thing that you chew gum in baseball. Mm-hmm. That is a well-known thing.
Were either of you ever a baseball player?
I played Little League.
Oh.
Yeah, but never, not beyond that.
No, that was Matt, actually good. Do you look at me? Come on.
I can 100% see you on a Little only, League.
I can see it too.
Only when forced to play. No, I think I did the soccer league and I hated that so much that my parents were like, no, you don't have to do baseball.
My family, my dad made me do a basketball, like I did it for like one league or whatever the hell for kids, and I was so terrible, so bad at basketball that our team wasn't great, but like it was the last game and we were like in like probably last place. And the coach told all the other kids that me and another boy had never like scored a basket. We never got the ball in the hoop. So he said to like throw us the ball as much as possible so we could have that experience. And I couldn't do it. And the other kid did. And I felt so abandoned. I felt so like I'm the only, like I never got to get the ball in the hoop. And then at the end when they gave trophies out and like they it was like, you know, best layup or whatever, and my trophy, this is true and I still have it, it's actually right there, it was for best attitude. And even then when I was a kid I knew that was a bullshit thing. I knew it was like best attitude.
But I gotta say, of all of the like everyone gets a trophies kind of trophies, best attitude specifically is so great because it is kind of gay coded.
Oh yeah,
you know? They were.
But it's also, you know, a handout. It's like when I used to teach improv and there was somebody not very good after a while. You couldn't even think of a good note to give them. And the thing you could always say is, oh, great energy.
Yeah. Oh, I think I got that note a couple times in improv classes.
Yeah, sorry, it was for me.
Same. I'm trying to think. I did play as an adult. I was in some kickball leagues.
Oh, were you in the gay kickball?
I did the straight league, and it worked because my friend met her husband and had a kid. She got something out of it. And then I did the gay league, and people take it so seriously. But turns out I was really good at catching. Speaking of balls, I was really good at catching the balls when someone would kick a fly. I would always catch it in the outfield. And I remember feeling like I really reclaimed my terrible sports energy from childhood because I would just sit in the outfield, like looking at the grass, I would sit down. I was not interested in running. I couldn't understand why are we here? Like, what's the point of it? I didn't like any of it. Matt, were you a sporty youth?
Not at all. No, I was very scared of it. Avoided it at all costs. Yeah. I remember some of them, like basketball, some of the rules were so confusing to me. I remember trying to just sort of perform the idea of being somebody who was on the court running back. And you know what I mean? Just look like I'm in on the action. I'm not going to touch the ball, but I'm going to really sort of look intentional. But I had no fucking idea I was just sort of mimicking what I the attitudes of other players I watched. But I'm in a gay pickleball league now. And it is really nice to be in a sporting environment where someone throws you the ball and you don't catch it. Like, you don't really give a shit. You don't look cool or no one's going to make fun of you.
Yeah.
That's what I hated was that the other kids knew to not give me the ball. They just we all knew no one's talking about it, but we all know if you give me the ball, it's not going to work out in your favor. So but now, I do. And I maybe I should join pickleball.
Yeah. Listen, I'll teach you how to play.
So I don't know. I think there's so much, at least for me, so much tied into why I didn't like sports or think I was good at sports, because I was gay and because I was in the closet, and it seemed like I hated being around straight boys. I was scared of them. And I also, I think so much was tied into being gay that now I'm oh, I'm actually a better athlete than I knew I was. I was a kid. I never thought I was good.
You know,
I hated it. It was
I never thought about that. My hatred of playing sports was because it was, I think the teams were always all boys, and I did not like being around that energy.
Me neither.
And my good friends were girls, and I missed being with them. And my cousins were all straight boys, and I just they would want to play army and
and football confused me completely. I hated football.
Oh, yeah.
Watching it, and I hate anything or contact sports or sports where you get hurt. Boxing has never made sense to me. How is that enjoyable? Tennis is fine, but no one gets hurt unless you trip.
Let's get together and you teach me how to French braid a My Little Pony hair.
I'll meet you where the French Marketplace used to be.
Okay, and we will. And we'll French braid.
The Scorched Earth French Market.
Scorched Earth French Market
and
site.
We'll do the My Little Pony braids.
Great.
Hey, here's a fun piece of trivia about this episode. You know, when Miranda is crossing the street to go, I think when she's running from, hiding from her ex or following her ex or whatever, and she passes, after she's just done that monologue you were talking about, she passes a girl on the street who's crying to her friend about a breakup. And then it's almost just a date player. That is my friend Maggie Kiley. She's a big TV director. I don't know if you've ever worked with her. And also an actress. And
that's cool.
Yeah. I said to my husband, should I ask Maggie to send in a voice memo and talk about her experience on the show? And he was like, God, no. She doesn't give a shit. She's busy. So anyway, moving on.
Oh, you know what? Shout out for, I was just noticing Carrie's apartment. It was like, oh, this isn't a pretty accurate just depiction of what like a studio apartment in New York would feel like at the time. Though the fact that like,
yeah,
in the episode, they're like, she's a columnist, a sex columnist. I'm like, oh, wow. The idea that you could be, make a full-time living and afford an apartment in New York being a columnist is hilarious. But, you know, we're so used to seeing like the Friends apartment that was giant, but this one.
Yeah. Which, by the way, they did, just to be fair, establish that Monica's grandmother gave her the, or had
that's right,
rent controlled and given it to her or something. They justified it somehow.
But still, even if it was a two-bedroom, it wouldn't look like that. It was so big.
No, it was very big. Once again, too big. Love Carrie calling Miranda from the payphone. We talked about that little misdirect. Yeah, it's just... Beautiful ending to a beautiful episode. Carrie and Miranda sitting down together, and her little VO about how the one thing you have to, the only, you'll never get whatever, you'll never get through any breakup without your friends.
Your friends
is the best of it.
Quick question: what season were we in?
Season two.
Two.
No, I mean like
first episode of season two.
Of like the four
oh,
seasons
of the year.
I'm just noticing because like
of white,
you
what?
Know they're never in those days of TV. You were sort of like. You were kind of like 4 months ahead of when the episode would come out is when you'd be filming it. So you wouldn't be like correctly filming winter during winter, etc. But they were kind of like, they were wearing coats and gloves at one point, but it was so sunny and bright. I was trying to figure out like,
yeah,
was it supposed to be a spring or a winter?
Oh, and also she walked into the diner at the end, or the restaurant at the end, when she's meeting Miranda. And all of a sudden, even though we never saw it, she had like a newspaper over her head, like it had been raining, and she had water on her like chest. And but it hadn't been raining when in any of the other scenes outside. So I think they were trying to, maybe it came out during winter, this episode.
Yeah, like was the season the premiere? Also, sorry, can we talk about speaking of outside, the baseball stadium seating set was absolutely not a stadium. It had to be.
You don't think they shot that at Yankee Stadium?
It had to be some bleachers that they rolled into a parking lot. It was, and then they cut to the, like, that footage, like the grainiest footage of a baseball game. It was questionable.
Yeah.
Did you notice the Anne Frank line?
Okay, we got to talk. That was like,
that
what?
Jarred me. I played that back. I'm like, did she really just say,
what?
Hey, Anne
See,
Frank?
Wait, I blacked this out. What happened?
It's the very beginning of the episode, and at Carrie's apartment, and there's a knocking on the door, and she goes to the door and opens it up, and it's Miranda and Charlotte, and Miranda walks in, and I think the first thing she says is like, come on, Anne Frank. We're going to get you out of this, like as if she's been like trapped in the attic or something.
Oh, Miranda.
I know. I had to rewind it because I'm like, did she just
it was
call
shocking.
Her Anne Frank?
It was shocking.
It's not even clever.
It's, yeah, it's really not. Makes and Miranda just, she knows better.
I guess she was implying that she's not leaving. You're just staying in your apartment, like hiding like Anne Frank.
I guess so.
I don't know.
Yeah, you kind of want a more of a hermit reference than a something so Holocausty. Gosh, I missed that completely. Now I'll never unhear it.
It's right away. It's pretty early on. Also, side note, I love that woman who played the Peanuts.
Who is she?
Oh, yeah.
Who is she? Got one eye patch.
She had an eye patch.
She had one of her
Why?
Lenses was a sunglass, and one lens was clear.
Yeah. Was that what it was? But it looked like an eye patch.
It looked like an eye patch. She's a star. Where is she?
She's like, change your name, change your phone. They're all bums. Or whatever she said. She was great.
She's another character to add to your show, by the way, Mitch.
Yeah.
The iconic Peanuts lady from
and of course she ends it with, you got a problem?
Yeah, the extras are all laughing hysterically.
Yeah.
Every time I'm like, oh God, here they're doing that, you know, direct to camera thing. But then sometimes there's a little moment like that that's just a gem.
It's weird to think that that was the whole, like, that was the concept for the show was, okay, she's a columnist. She's giving people advice and you're getting people's like real questions and attitudes on these topics directly at you, sort of as if they were responding to a column. And they're like, we're absolutely getting rid of the concept of the show. We got to get rid of that and just do a normal show.
That happens.
We didn't talk about Miranda creeping on all of the Yankees, trying to like leering at them through the door as they're all changing. She's trying to spy on them. Another thing that
Samantha. Did you say?
Samantha. Definitely.
Yeah, that was a weird, weird moment. Because it was in slow-mo, the way the door was closing. And she looked genuinely, like, not horny, but, like...
thirsty just, for that D.
Yeah.
Just fully, like, mesmerized in a trance.
In a trance.
It's so interesting that, like, she's like, oh, I can't... I'm missing it because I've got this boyfriend. But, like, if you think about it now, her character would be not... She wouldn't have boyfriend. She would just be like, oh, yeah, I sleep with whoever I want. Like, she would be... Right. Open or polyamorous, like she would not be confined to the rules of like heteronormative dating, I don't think. Maybe
she has to do some tough work, you know, like those, that long sex sequence where he's trying to, you know, get her off and she's not, and she's coaching him, and God bless Kim Cattrall.
Oh yeah, she's a pro.
What was the classic Samantha sex pun that she dropped in this episode while they were standing there?
Honey, his cup runneth over, because they noticed the cup in his
was that the one? There was another one.
Yeah. There's definitely another one too.
Runneth over.
Oh my God! And then she had to no wonder she didn't want to come back. She was like, "Do you guys know I was the one showing my titties upside down, getting just having a strange man slide back and forth on top of me, like, oh my God.
Wasn't this at the time of HBO where it was like everything was just, you had to have nudity, you had to have like everything. Remember that? What was that show? Was it called Hung? Was that show?
Yeah, that was on Showtime. Hung, yeah.
Oh, was that show? Oh, I thought that was HBO. Oh.
Who was that for? It's because did they think that straight men would watch this show
exactly
to see hot naked women? Because the primary audience was women, and it's like not that they
probably did have to factor that in, because they didn't, like HBO wasn't really like programming for women, and then they make this. I'm sure there were conversations that were like, let's just throw the guys a little bone.
Yeah.
You know?
What was the rule? Like Sarah SJP had, she had her in her contract that she didn't, she would never.
She never gets nude. Yeah.
But all the other three have to show.
Three all do. Yeah.
Wow.
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 And now it's like, I don't know. There's something Carrie never really does a sex scene. She does like sort of, there'll be like sort of cinematic gauzy moments where a guy's kissing her neck on top of her or something, but you don't want to see Sarah Jessica Parker like fucking, you know, it's not what the Lord intended.
Yes.
I hadn't thought about that like that. Wow. I mean, if the women wanted that, then I support them in their decision to show anything that they want. It just seems like of the time when people were being strong armed in their contracts into having to do that historically.
Joe Stark, by the way, the Yankee, played by an actor named Mark Devine or Divine, lots of credits. This is one of the earlier ones, but he was in an episode of 6 Feet Under. He was on Judging Amy for 4 episodes. He has his own production company. called Sand Dollar Films. He's producing something called Lady and the Panda. He's busy. Doesn't say anything.
Sand Dollar. He has the production with company with Dolly Parton. What?
I mean, is that her production company?
Yeah, her company was called Sand Dollar.
Yeah, I think he maybe just copied that by mistake.
Okay.
Maybe his has like an extra L in dollar.
Anything else? We kind of did it. No.
I'm looking it up. Oh, his might be two separate words. Sand dollar. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Because Dolly's is sand dollar, just SANDOLLAR.
Ah, okay.
I only know that because Buffy was produced by that. It's a whole like trivia thing. Anyway, there you go.
I'm glad we got to the bottom of that.
Yeah.
Guys, this was a dream come true. There's nobody I'd rather go to a ball game with. Thank you both so much.
I can't wait. I think we should all go to a ball game.
Let's go to a ball game.
Okay. Have you guys gone to a Dodger game like in the last few years?
I have. I like going to a Dodger game at night. I hate going during the day. I like going at night. Oh,
so hot.
I can't take it. But I actually think it's kind of fun to go. And, you know, they now serve wine and stuff. So I kind of like going. Yeah. Have you gone, Tom?
Oh, it's been years. But the last time I went, I think everyone was getting heat stroke because it was so hot.
Yeah.
And we had to leave early. I mean, I went to the Blackpink concert at Dodger Stadium. Does that count?
I went to the Elton John concert last year.
That's what you should do at a baseball stadium is go to a concert.
That's what it was meant for. You know what is fun is Angel City, the women's soccer team in LA. Their season just started and we've gone to some of those and barely understand soccer, never cared about it, but there's so much more
action and movement, you know?
Yeah. And they're so good.
I'd be interested in that.
Yeah.
I'd like to do that.
All right. We're going to go to a soccer game. Tom Link, Mitch Silpa, thank you both so much for being here.
Pleasure. My pleasure.
I loved all of it, every second of it. And I might actually go back and watch some more Sex and the City.
I know.
Oh, yeah. Well, then my work here is done.
Mm-hmm.
God bless you.
And that's our show. Please do give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Instagram at And Just Like Matt Pod. And Just Like Matt is a World of Wonder production created and hosted by me, Matt McConkie. Our executive producer is Renee Colvert. Our associate producer is Jess Walensky. And our audio engineer is Justin Mattson. Many thanks to Michael Pressman and everyone at World of Wonder.